Welcome to Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. It's like coffee with an analyst, but there's no actual coffee. Each episode, we interviewed an expert in the field of law enforcement analysis to share their career-defining stories and to get their insights on the world. Please join us on recognizing and learning from these brilliant minds as we define the law enforcement analysis profession one episode at a time.
Thank you for joining me. I hope many aspects of your life are progressing. My name is Jason Alder, and today our guests have over 500 years of law enforcement analysis experience. Yes, this is the wrap-up show for 2020. And while some of you may wishing 2020 to be over, this will always be the year that the podcast started. So with me, I bring in Mindy Yoon. Mindy, how we doing?
Good. I'm excited. And I can't wait to do this again next year when we have over 1,000 years of law enforcement experience.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been quite a year. I think back to when we started the conversation late last year about the podcast. I've told the story a couple of times now, but it was at last year's IACA conference that you and I were talking, and I started dropping some names, and you had no idea who I was talking about. And one of them was Susan Whitford, with Susan Smith, Susan Hammond, you may know her as, and she was just the IACA president 5 years ago. And it just, that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me in terms of needing to do this podcast and getting this going, because it's apparently so much of our history gets lost very quickly. It's been a great ride. I think back to when we started and some of the ideas that we had, some of my crazy ideas that you came to me and I said, no, let's not do that. And then 2 weeks later, I said, you know what? That was a good idea. Let's go ahead and do that. So I really appreciate your patience with my slowness.
Yeah, I actually remember that moment when we were in an Uber or something at the conference going somewhere, and we were throwing around the idea and you were sharing me these names. And I can just feel that vibe. You were just like, kids these days don't know their history. And I was like, I don't know. There's no IACA like history class that we have to go to, you know, become an analyst. So I did feel really bad, but yeah, it was a good motivation to get this going. And I'm so happy that we did it. And yeah, I get comments and responses from people as well, where they're like, I've never heard of these people. And I think I shared with you, especially the episode of Mark Stallos, where I was like, I didn't know who this person was. And, you know, he helped found IACA, like, you know, as we know now. So I think it was something great that we did.
We set out to showcase the analyst, and that's what this show really is about. It's about the people. It's about the analyst coming on, describing how they discovered the law enforcement analysis profession, to share their career defining moments, to supply lessons learned and tips and tricks. And so it's a couple of different themes that we have in the show. It's not only displaying the history of the people involved, it's finding out different ways to help our audience out in their job. That's what's, I think, been so exciting in the broad range of different analysts that we've had on the show. There's different points, different topics, different tips that you can bring out of each episode.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost a natural progression from what we were doing. Because for those that don't know, Jason and I met on the mentorship committee. This is the sense that I get is like almost having, what are we up to now? Like 33 episodes minus mine. You know, it's like having 32 mentors in your pocket kind of thing, hearing all these different stories, hearing their experience. And like you were saying, the advice and tips and tricks that they have for incoming, even, you know, veteran analysts, I think it's so beneficial to have. And it's a different avenue that has been explored once. I was going to say hasn't been explored yet, but I remember Debbie's had a podcast in the late 2000s, I believe. Podcasts are all the craze now. And like you were saying, with 2020, people are mainly staying in like this after they're done with all their binging of Netflix, they can tune into our podcast too.
And one of the themes that we've had throughout the show this year is many people have suggested the importance of networking. with all these guests that we've had on this show, every one of them you can message and they're going to be willing to try to help you, whether it's directly or to even suggest contacting somebody else, point you in the right direction, getting back to your mentor comment.
Yeah. And like you were saying with networking, and it's one thing, you know, passing by them at the conference, like I do see them, but like, I'm trying to think, like I haven't really messaged or met or interacted with many of our guests, you know, prior to the show, but I feel like this kind of opens the door, like, oh, I kind of get to know them in like a different light, not in like a creepy way, but it's like, oh, hey, you know, like you were on the podcast with Jason and I heard you talking about this. For example, with our most recent episode with Lori's, is obviously she was a Colorado analyst and she is out here and I have interacted with her before, but post interview and the things that she said that I heard, I'm like, I never knew this side of you. Like, obviously I knew you in the profession and we've worked together, but I didn't know this side of you. So it generated that conversation between us. That's a recent example that I can think of. And I hope other people had that conversation, that engagement as well. Like when they heard their colleagues or their friends say something, and hopefully they learned something new about people that they've maybe known for years. And it's like, oh, I didn't know you had this story. I didn't know you had this tip. I didn't know this side of you. So hopefully other people had similar experiences.
Yeah. Well, I do know most of the guests that were on the show this year. Most of it just came out of convenience, but I do actually want to thank, in particular, special thanks to Samantha Gwynn, Carolyn Cassidy, Sally Terabaugh, Sean Baer, Mark Stallo, and Mike Winslow. Those were our first six guests, and all of them agreed to record with me without being able to actually hear any episodes published. So they trusted me enough that they were going to at least come on the show and try to figure out what I was trying to accomplish. So I do special thanks to them, because they had nothing to go by in terms of what the finished product was going to sound like. And then to your point, even though I know a lot of these people, there was still a lot that I learned because of the podcast. I don't think it would have ever come up in conversation. Things like Sally Terabaugh, in her episode, she talked about being a founder of the Lebanese women's hockey team and how she accomplished that. Kyle Stoker started his career as a police officer. Matt Smith meeting Vanilla Ice in a bar one random night. Sean Baer, in his first analyst interview, got laughed at when he said that his goal was to be police chief someday. Even Steve Gottlieb, he was a DJ in high school on a radio. He had a radio program on Sunday mornings. I just can't imagine that coming up in conversation anywhere. And even with Steve's that radio DJ, that gave us the idea to do the favorite first jobs call-in segment that we've established now. So it's been a lot of fun, but we've also covered some serious topics as well, like you just mentioned with Lori. Albert Missa talked about his cousin's murder. Paul Arnold talked about having to change his identity to protect him and his family. So those topics are very real. They are thought-provoking. It's been a wide range of emotions thus far. And that's really finding out more and more and more about each one of our fellow analysts is what makes me so excited to do this each and every week.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm in the same boat as you. Is, like I said, with Lori earlier, is we interact with them, we know them, but it's mostly on a professional level. And even when we are friends, you know, these are maybe some topics that just never came to light and you never talk about it, but they have this platform now to share it and feel like, you know, you become closer to these people.
Sure. So the way we're going to do this, we're going to talk about different episodes, different moments throughout our year in 2020. And we're going to go through some of our favorite moments. We'll go over some of our favorites, don't be that analyst callers and favorite first jobs. We'll talk about some of our favorite words to the world and public service announcements as well. At the end of this episode, we're going to world premiere Mindy and I's own public service announcement. So you'll want to stay to the very end. So the first segment I want to talk about, Mindy, is the badge stories. For those that are new to the show, the badge story is the career-defining moment for an analyst, whether that be a case, a project. Some analysts talking this throughout this year. Some had multiple, some had just one. Where that came from is my son's, he's in his first year of Boy Scouts. And in Boy Scouts, you earn all these different badges. When you and I, Mindy, were talking early in the spring, I mentioned, I was like, oh yeah, you would earn an analyst badge for that. Just joking. But it's been a really good topic because it tells people how this analyst, this guest has impacted the profession.
Definitely. And one of the things I enjoy whenever I go to the conference is going to these case study presentation, and the badge story is kind of like a case study that they're presenting to us. Obviously, there's no visual that goes along with it, but they're pretty detailed and I can follow along with the story. And case study presentations that are at the conference, you know, you learn something, you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I didn't think that I should do that or look into that or maybe try this out. So I've learned a lot from the badge stories and taking it back and utilize it in my own professional career.
Yeah. So a couple of our favorite badge stories, you like to tell everybody, all of them are our favorite badge stories, but we sat down and we forced ourselves to come up with a couple badge stories. Samantha Gwynn's, and she was our very first guest on the podcast, and her talking about the serial rapist that went multi-state, I found was fascinating and really thought-provoking in terms of, you know, not only that particular case, but then getting into her work with victim advocacy groups. And then in the same vein, Steve French, his bad story was about gang rape. That was emotional, his describing what that victim went through. I also like how he was so involved in identifying the perpetrators of the case and using the locator of the cell phones and then using the license plate reader on the bridge. For those that haven't heard that story, I highly recommend going back and listen to Steve French's episode. And then Danelle DiGiosio, again, it's a serial rapist. That one was multi-jurisdictional, multi-state. I highly recommend getting her perspective on it because that case that she talked about, there's been books, there's been documentaries. Netflix did a movie about that particular case. So it was fascinating from that perspective to watch the Netflix movie and then get some of the behind the scenes from Danelle. And then finally, Sheila Dorn, who we just had on a couple of weeks ago. One of the themes that we've had on this show, it's kind of been accidental this year, is telephone toll analysis. We had Scott Eicher on talking about telephone toll analysis, Mike Winslow as well. I thought Sheila's badge stories talking about missing persons and talking about pattern of life analysis. Sheila talked about the behavior of people and what's normal and then how it might change with one particular event. So she gave a couple of good stories, one in New York, one in Florida, about studying people's behavior in terms of their cell phone records. So again, I highly recommend that one as well.
Yeah, so I remember Steve French's episode. I remember that was very emotional and it was hard to listen to. But I think it's important for us to recognize that the job is not always glamorous. There are going to be tough cases that we will have to deal with. Maybe we're not the frontline officers that have to be there and witness it in person, or the dispatchers who receive that call, but we're still a part of the investigation. We still have to read these case reports, help with the investigations, and bring people to justice. So that was a hard episode to listen to, but Steve really gave a good message too, because I remember his title. I think we titled it, you know, Steve French, like the compassionate chap or something, which is so on point and so cute. And the reason why we focus on that aspect is because despite the horrific story that he shared with us, he still gave a message of this is why we do what we do. And this is why we have to persevere. This is why we have to take care of ourselves. And I feel like those are the things that don't get mentioned all the time, of like the mental and emotional toll that it takes working these cases. So I really recommend that episode.
The nicknames for the episode. That was your idea. And I think a lot of people have asked me, it's like, okay, how do you assign those nicknames? So do you just want to talk a little bit about the rhyme or reason behind those nicknames?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, like you listen to the episodes and you just see what vibe they give you, I guess, like how they make you feel and like the overall theme. The easy ones would be focusing on their bad stories, but secondary, I want to focus on their overall message. So I take inspiration from their bad story. I take inspiration from their words to the world. I take inspiration from their experience and their background. So that's how it's been. I try to mix it up and try to make it related. Thus far, knock on wood, like nobody has said like, hey, I hate my title kind of thing, like change it. So far, I think people like their titles and I do get Jason's input too. It's not like, no, it's my way or the highway. It's not like that. And our most recent episode with Lori's, I title it The Assertive Analyst. If you listen to the episode, she talks about how being assertive, it was used with a negative connotation. But for me, when I titled it, I was like, hey, I want to take this word. I want to own it. I want to showcase it in a positive light. Do you feel the same way? Because this is the one where I'm like a bit back and forth. I'm like, this is how I see it. I hope you see it too. So different ways.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting, especially with Lori's there, because people reading that might not understand until you listen to the episode and then you realize why that nickname was given. So now we're going to go through some of our favorite moments of the year. Again, we have a lot of favorite moments, but these, as we were sitting down and preparing for this wrap-up show, these are just some moments that came to mind for Mindy and I. Mindy, you want to talk about your first one?
Well, obviously it would be my, no, I'm kidding. Now, my favorite episode would be of Tony Berger because, again, a little biased because he was my mentor. I don't think anyone would believe me when I said I didn't write it in because I am the listed writer for the show. But just so people know, and you probably get this by now, these things aren't scripted. We don't script the answers of our guests. Like we have questions, we outline the general timeline of what to expect, but the show itself, the answers are not scripted. So my shock moment or like the awe moment that I had was when you asked Tony what is his, I guess, his proudest moment or his best accomplishment. And he said people, and then he said me specifically. And I was like, oh, my mentor is proud of me. Like I got like a bit teary. Like I always knew that he was proud of me, but it was just like nice hearing it, especially when you aren't expecting it either. Because I remember listening to it while, you know, we were still going through the draft and that caught my attention. So yeah, I really like that moment.
Yeah, it was a particularly funny moment too, because I was going to joke around with him because I was assuming that he was going to say something else. And I was going to say, wait a minute, it's not Mindy. And and we were just right on the same wavelength with that. So that's made it just a great moment. So it's definitely a favorite moment of mine as well. And then one of my favorite moments is when we had Rhea Gerstenkorn on. Rhea is chair of the IACA's ethics committee. I always got to wondering, well, if everybody on the board is under investigation, how would that work? Because the board is the one that makes the final decision on terms of all ethics violations. I asked Christopher Bruce that, and he said, well, it would be up to the chair of the ethics committee, which was news to Rhea. And so that particular moment when she realizes that she was the designated survivor for IACA, back to your nicknames designation, that was just a fantastic moment for me when it happened.
Yeah. And like I was saying earlier about like, there's no IACA history class that you have to take to be an analyst or be a member. So that was something new to me too. And I was just like, you know, that's actually really neat. Like, you know, we go about our day, you know, operating as normal. And IACA has always functioned, you know, since I became a member, like always usually smoothly, you know. So it was interesting to know, like, you're right. I never ever actually thought of that. Like, what if there is this big controversy and the whole board is, you know, on the chopping board? Like, what happens then? So that was really interesting to learn about. And so I really like that moment too. One of my other favorite moments, or like all moments, was Mary Bertuccelli's story. Her dad helping her get her first, or was it her first, but helping her get
the first job back, getting home to Arizona.
Yeah. So getting her job, I thought that was really sweet. And just, I don't know, just something I didn't think we could do. I remember when you were interviewing her and asking the question, like you were not confused, but just kind of taken back. Like, wait, so your dad just walked into the police department, asked to speak to the chief, and was put on the schedule? Like, who does that? Like, and I'm like, that's so cool. That's so sweet. You know, growing up, I always hear, you know, like, yeah, just go into the business, you know, put your application or resume on their table and force them to interview you. I'm like, is that a thing people do? Because when we were listening to Sean Bear's hiring guide, it's pretty much everything is online. Everything's technology. Like you apply online, you submit your resume online, like you're communicating with HR over email. So just the thought of like someone going in person, it's just like such a new like supposedly it's an old concept, but like it's a new concept for me. So I'm like, is that a thing people can do? So I really thought that was sweet that he did that for her. And obviously it had a good outcome, good ending, like, you know, what she does now. But I just thought that was such a sweet moment.
That whole episode with Mary was fantastic. From my point of view, I replaced her at HIDA at Baltimore Police Department when she left for that Arizona job that her dad helped her get. It was really great going back in time with her because there were so many people that we both know through our time in Baltimore. And so that was a particularly fun time for me to reminisce with her.
Definitely. And like, I remember that episode too, you were saying like, oh, what a small world, like so many things would happen. And then I remember you talking about, I guess for lack of a word, like the domino effect, like if this didn't happen, then this wouldn't have happened and you would have gone a totally different way. I'm just thinking like, what if you've gone a different way with this podcast even occurred? Like, would we ever met and all this stuff? So if
yeah, it's because of Mary that we have this podcast.
I'll give her credit.
Yes. We'll have to put her in the on the website.
Yeah. All right. And like you were saying, like there's so many favorite moments, and I'm going to bring up Lori again. Her episode was great and it's recent. I really recommend, and I really like Christopher Bruce's episode and Lori's for similar reasons. So as we talked about with Steve French's episode earlier as well, there are going to be hard times. There are going to be tough conversations. And I feel like Christopher Bruce and Lori's episode really touch on heavy topics. And I feel like those episodes are the ones that really resonated with me because it hits me on an emotional and mental level. Because again, I feel like as we go through our lives, our careers, you know, we learn how to do the job. We learn how to, you know, put pins on a map or how to put together a bulletin, but we don't talk about the dark times or we don't talk about like the tough subjects. With Chris's episode, it wasn't so much that he was being critical of the profession. It was just, he was telling us like, hey, everything we're doing, it's great, but we can do more and, you know, reflect on where we're going in the future and make sure we're still staying on course. Like, I thought that was like a really important message for us to follow. And I remember telling you, I was after listening to his episode, I'm like, this is why we're doing this, like to get not only getting the analyst story, but also maintaining history and being reminded of where we started and the pioneers who helped pave the way. I think with Chris, I call them the traditional. And with Chris, with
thank
those,
you for not calling them boomers.
Oh yeah, that was option two. It was a close second. The okay boomer analyst. No. And people always refer to Chris as like the historian, especially being on elections. When I first started, like, for example, I'm like, why do we have the 2% voting phase? Like, I don't understand the history behind it because I am not. Yeah, I'm a relatively new member. So I'm like, I don't understand the history of it. I'm sure there's a good reason, but we were always referred to like, let's ask Chris. Like he knows his history, especially with IACA and the profession in general. So it was very refreshing to hear this raw, honest, again, not critique in a bad way, but just commentary on the profession as a whole and where we came from, how we can improve and stuff. And then with Lori's, similar in the sense that she hit on a heavy topic of gender discrimination. I think I was joking to you about earlier, like, you know, these aren't topics where you're like at the water cooler and be like, hey, how about then gender and discrimination? You know, there's just things that you don't talk about. And they're also generally they're subtle too. And these aren't things that you're necessarily taught in school or even, you know, on the job to recognize and to deal with and to how to approach it. So I really think it's important to give a different, I don't want to say flavor, give it a different perspective in our profession, because it's not just this is how you put together a spreadsheet, this is how you do a map, this is how you put together a bulletin. Like, there's more to it. And I feel like those episodes, among others, you know, most of our episodes hit on these heavy topics and interpersonal skills, I guess, for lack of better words, that are important for people to know.
Yes. So one of the things I always tell our guests in preparing for the episode is this is their showcase, and we can talk about anything they want to talk about, and we cannot talk about anything that they don't want to talk about. And some people, you know, it's their decision. They said, oh, I don't want to talk about that. Both Christopher and Lori, they wanted to talk about these topics to inspire others, to be thought-provoking, and to encourage other people to take action. A couple of the more impressive episodes for me was Carola Jasonski. She got the IACA certification, taking the exam in the English language and passing it. And that, to me, with English being her second language, is just really impressive. Really impressive to be able to understand the language and to understand not only our language, but the way our, in America, we have certain ways that we ask questions, phrase questions and answers. It just really impressed me that she was able to do that. And she talked about preparing for that and all of what she went through and what it meant to her to be IACA certified. Another one is Matt Harris. We called him the humble analyst because he just kept saying, well, I just did this and I just did that. But he had multiple bad stories, and everything that he did helped close the case. And without his contribution, each case would have taken longer to solve. He talks about RMS, records management system, changing over, being part of that process. He also talks about data management. It was a fascinating episode from his perspective, and he was dealing with the wildfires in California all the time that we were recording the call.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember when we were recording mine and you called me out on it, like, you're pulling a Matt Harris. And I'm like, oh, that's fair. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Is that the phrase? Yeah. Mm-hmm. in that episode as well, where you were saying that in general, you know, analysts don't give themselves enough credit. Like, most of us just see, like, well, we're just doing our jobs. We're just doing what's expected of us. Sometimes lose sight of, like, yeah, because you did your job well, that things are going well. That was a funny moment and a good message. I remember really liking Amitri Lewis's episode as well. Hers was the lone wolf analyst. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that one. I'm fortunate in that, in my experience, I've always worked on a team. So I can't say I know what it's like being the only one. And I'm always impressed with people who were their agency's only analyst, and also those who started many years ago before we have all this advancement in technology and theories and practices and stuff. So I really like Mitri's, I guess, like her origin story, how she started. You know, I remember, like, you talked about the pins on the map thing. Like, those are things that I learned in school and see on TV. Like, because when I started, we already had ArcGIS and the technology and all this stuff. So I'm like, oh, that it's so neat to learn about how people used to do it and how she managed on her own, how she advertised herself to people who are new to the idea of crime analysis. That episode was really impressive to me of, like, how she started and what she's done since then, and, like, the legacy that she left for analysts in Florida.
Yeah. And I can just envision those maps being laid out, being on wheels, or being, however described it, where she's got to move one map out of the way to get to the other, using pins and then the dot stickers and string. I can visualize that whole thing and how she described it. And that was just interesting perspective of just a different time. Mm-hmm. Another episode that was more thought-provoking for me was Paul Arnold's. Paul talked about changing his identity for the safety of his family. and tips on not being able to be found on the internet. His perspective of just talking pretty openly about what his experience was. Emotions on both sides, because not only did he have fear for him and his children, but he also had a story about finding his real father. So there was a lot there to deal with in that episode.
Yeah. And I really like that episode because Paul was saying like he used his skill that was on the job that he was able to translate to his personal life. I don't know. I feel like when we first started, we try to go the other way around. Like what skills in my life can I use to, you know, beefing up my resume or CV to make me competitive when applying for a job? So it's funny or interesting to see it coming from the other end of like the skills you got from the job apply to your life instead of skills you acquire from your life to apply in your job. So I really like that. I think another thought-provoking episode was Scott Eicher's episode. That episode in particular, because I know when we first were discussing like who we wanted to bring in, because this is Analyst Talk with Jason Elder, some of the guests that we have are sworn officers who have done analytical work, who have oversaw an analyst unit. And with Scott, it was almost a gray area of like, this is an agent. So on the sworn side, who is a specialist in analytical practices, particularly cell phone analysis. So where is he? Is he on the sworn side? Is he on the analyst side? Like, where do we put them? Where do we put him? Is he right for our show? Like, obviously he is an expert that we wanted to talk to, but I think we were talking about, should we do a spinoff series to, you know, and have Scott as like our first guest? Should we, does it work? I remember Scott was the guest that we're going back and forth a lot of like, where does he fit? And that conversation long ago, I think crime analysis is more accepted now than it was years ago. But, you know, I heard conversations of departments like, well, why hire a civilian analyst when I can just take an officer off the street and make them do analytical work? Like, can't that work kind of thing? And I feel like we still every now and then have that conversation. It's not impossible, but I think in Scott's episode, he really differentiates like, you know, these are the different things that we bring to the table. It's not to say one is better than the other, but we bring different things to the table and we work together. And I think that was an important message for both sides of the aisle to hear like, yeah, this isn't a competition. Like we all want the same thing. We all have our unique skill set that we can all use to accomplish the same goal.
Yeah, I mean, with that, really one of the things that I stressed about this show is it was going to be analysts talking. I did not want it to be analysts being talked about or being talked for. I wanted them to be talking about stuff he or she did. That was really important to me for this show. And it will continue to be important to me is analysts talking about their own work. Clearly, when you listen to Scott's episode, it was his work, it was his analysis that he was describing as he was out in the field.
So it really doesn't matter whether they're sworn or civilian, as long as they are or were doing analysis.
And then, I don't want to end the segment on like a heavy note, but I guess here we go. My most shocked episode has to be Yarissa's Walsh's episode. It was early on in the episode too. I was not prepared for it. I think when I first listened to it, I had to pause it to just catch my breath and then like get back into listening to it because she was sharing about her childhood, her upbringing, and what motivated her to do what she does now, who she became as a person. Graphic warning for people, especially if you want to listen to the full episode, what she was saying, one of her childhood experience was when they found her childhood best friend, their organs and guts were like all removed. And it was just such a horrific graphic to imagine in your mind. Hearing her say that that's her motivation for wanting to help people, wanting to teach and wanting to make the world a better place. Obviously, I can't imagine. I've never been through that. And just such a strong inspiration she is to experience something so horrific. And instead of being mortified for life, you know, it's like she turned that energy to something more positive, to something to help the next generation, you know, the current generation and the next generation to not go through that again. So I was really shocked at the story, but also inspired by her tenacity and just her perspective of how she saw it and used it as inspiration.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's take a break. After the break, we'll lighten up a little bit and want to get into the different segments to our show. This is Analyst Talk with Jason Elder. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sheila Dorn. Do you want to build your credibility with field personnel, with police officers on the street? Get a candy dish, put it on your desk, and fill it with good candy. That's your opportunity to talk with people and engage. You can send out a million emails. People might know your name, but they don't really know you until you talk to them face to face. And that candy dish is an opportunity to talk with people and really get to know them.
Hi, this is Jeffrey Vandersip, and I'm going to tell you about a couple of my pet peeves. Pet peeve number one is the size of parking lots at grocery stores. They create these parking lots for Yugos, and yet everybody is now driving a Ford F-150, and you can't fit in anything, or if you do, you're banging the doors of your neighbors. Pet peeve number two is the little button in cars that open the fuel filler door seems to be in the most oddest of places. And whenever I go somewhere else and I rent a car and I have to go to the gas station for the first time, I spend a half hour trying to figure out how to open the fuel filler door. Pet peeve number three is just packaging generally with things that you get in the mail. It's like Russian nesting dolls. You've got a box, and inside that box is another box. Inside that is another box. Inside that is a bubble wrap. And then you get to like a little piece of whatever, which is the thing actually sent. And finally, and again, betraying my age here, the screen filters that people use in their social media, everybody kind of looks like somebody out of Avatar. What's up with that?
Welcome back. This is the wrap-up episode for 2020. And we got a little heavy right before the break, but now I want to get into Don't Be That Analyst. That segment came about from my time in Nashville. There was a local sports radio program who had a call-in show. They would have Don't Be That Guy. Callers would say, don't be that guy that does this, 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 this. And they just have all these different callers with all these different scenarios in society that they see people doing. And so that's basically the reason behind Don't Be That Analyst, is mimicking their process of having it be a call-in and having people say, hey, don't be that analyst that does X, Y, and Z. We've had some really good ones. Some of them are funny, but some of them are pretty good advice. So next up is Stacy Belliton, followed by David Jimenez.
Don't be that analyst that's the hoarder of information, who's not willing to share information about the trends and patterns and cases in your jurisdiction.
Hi, Jason. Don't be that analyst is when asked by management to provide your perspective on a particular issue, just don't provide a copy and paste extract of an article or even a hyperlink for them to read further. Provide context. Provide your view on the issue instead of expecting the consumer to determine what they should read and what their take might be. Give them a bottom line. This is what analysts should be doing.
Yeah, I think both of those are really good examples for new analysts. Number one, don't hoard data. You want to share what you got. You want to reach out and network. You want to help as many analysts as you want to. But also with David's suggestion of just not passing along data, right? It's not just taking data and pushing it out and that's it. There's got to be context. There's got to be a way of why it's important. And drawing conclusions, bringing in your perspective or linking different ideas to it. Sometimes you're in a situation where your client, your person requesting the data doesn't want that. So you have to read the room a little bit, but at the same time, take the opportunity when you see it to say, hey, here's what you asked for, but here's some additional information and a different analysis that goes along with this that I want to share.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I see it. That's why we're hired as analysts, for our insight and our input. We can just regurgitate different headlines and make people read all these long articles or peer review papers. They hired us for a reason, to translate these big complicated data and information. Like, we can always source our work, but there should be at least a, I guess, executive summary there, or like you said, analysis there, because that's our job. We're analysts. We're not just, even know what to call it, like headline pusher.
Clickbait. We're just there for the clickbait.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these next two, I think, are pretty funny. So here is Angela Backer-Hines.
Don't be that analyst who replies all to every single email thread. I don't need my inbox flooded with "I don't have anything" responses from every person in a request chain.
I mean, that goes beyond analysis. That's like every office in the entire world.
Yeah.
But it's definitely true in analysis world and everywhere. Man, that reply all. For those that were wondering, well, what should you do? You got a big request, put the list of email addresses in the blind copy section. And mm-hmm. then you don't have to worry about people replying all. The worst is when someone replies all. It's like, why did you reply all? So definitely don't be that analyst.
And definitely. Then, yep. Agreed.
And then the final one is from Albert.
Don't be that analyst who makes attempt to identify bulletins for the paranormal. If it looks like a ghost, don't waste your time.
That's a hysterical one, because when you put pictures on bolos, they have to be clear. The ones that are such poor quality, no one's going to know who they are and be able to identify them.
Yeah, or the worst for me is when they do attempt to identify bulletins on vehicles, and it's just like the vehicle in the dark with just headlights flashing, and you're just like, I can't tell if that's a sedan, and I can't tell what's going on.
All right, so that's Don't Be That Analyst. Another caller segment that we have is Favorite First Jobs. And as I mentioned in the beginning of this episode, this spawned from Steve Gottlieb being a DJ in high school. And so I just started asking people, like, what's your favorite first job? To me, Sally Rawlings took the cake with one of her favorite first jobs.
Hi, Jason. when I was in high school, I got a speeding ticket. So my dad took my car away. But he said, you're still going to have a job and you're going to work for a friend of mine. And his son's going to drive you to work every day. Well, the company made hunting products and my job was to bottle elk urine for $3.50 an hour.
I didn't even know that was there was a job like that.
I love that, because I could just picture Sally as a teenager bottling urine for some reason. And it just makes me laugh. So that is a fantastic first job that she had. And speaking of Sally, in a way, and kind of more of a sobering note for this next section, is there were a couple of disappointments that we had this year and that I wanted to talk about briefly. We had one analyst that wanted to come on and talk about what they were doing in response to the riots and the political unrest in their city. And I thought that would have been a great topic. It would have been poignant. So over the summer, their department said no. Certainly understand. This is an open source that people can use. So I do understand why the analyst wasn't allowed to talk about it. But I was still disappointed, because I thought it was an opportunity for people to get more information and more context from an analyst. So maybe that analyst can put in for a conference and talk about it at a conference. I guess another one was an analyst didn't want to come on the show, again, because it's open source, because the analyst did not want their house to be vandalized. In the analyst community, law enforcement is being targeted. Their houses are being vandalized. So the analyst didn't want to be part of the show, because it was a public record. Again, that's just really disappointing. Makes me sad that even anything like that is happening. I guess in two of the lighter ones that I'm disappointed with the show is some analysts were too shy to come on the show. They didn't think that they had much to contribute and were just way too shy to do it.
Matt Harris.
Yeah, I mean, Matt came on. Yeah, Matt came on, but it was just little disappointing, because everybody has a story. We all contribute to this profession and we all have a story to tell. I certainly understand that folks are shy, can be introverts, and don't want that kind of exposure. But I do always encourage people to be pompous for this profession, even for a moment. And the last one that I was disappointed in, getting back to Sally, the bad segue that I just did right there. Sally's episode, she named the top three analyst units in the United States. I thought, wow. I mean, and she gave a real answer. She said, hey, it's this is what it is. This is why I think it is. It was a great take. And I thought, oh man, this is going to be good, because we'll get some chatter about this on the listserv, on the forums, on LinkedIn, on Facebook. We'll get some chatter going on about this. And so we asked the question. I was like, hey, do you agree with Sally? Do you not agree with Sally? And it was crickets. And I was just really disappointed that that didn't move the needle of conversation at all. It was one of those things that got a lot of likes, but nobody challenged Sally's top three analyst units. So apparently that's what they are. So the three were Scottsdale, Dallas, and Rochester, New York.
I don't know. I guess it would have been kind of conceited if she said something in Colorado where she works, but I was just like, okay, you know, that's nice. You know, represent the other states and stuff. But it was funny to me that, you know, obviously being a Coloradan here, and I'm like, okay, well, yeah, step of our game. I mean, I like my department, but yeah. Top three in the country is hard to.
Yeah. Back to the podcast and the logistics of the podcast. That's one thing that's really difficult, to come up with one area for everybody to comment, right? It's very segmented. We have the website, Podbean. You can't do it through the browser, and you have to log on with an account. So you can only do it through the phone with an account. We have a Facebook group. We have a LinkedIn group that you can leave comments with. The IACA forums, the Reddit crime analysis forum, the ILEA forum, we all post to. We recently got on Twitter. So there's not one platform for people to come to and talk about and chat about. But I would take any one of those. If you just any kind of feedback for us and let us know that, hey, I don't agree with those top three. Here's the real top three. Or compare and contrast your list with Sally's list. So the next segment is Words to the World. The inspiration behind Words to the World was from the YouTube show Hot Ones. That's a show that I like, and the guy interviews celebrities as they eat hot wings. He always gives them the last word on to promote any idea that they want to, and that's where I got the idea from. You know, I think my only criteria is keep it to about 30 or 90 seconds. I don't need them to go on this huge tangent as I'm trying to end the show, because it is our last segment for each episode.
For Words to the World and Don't Be That Analyst. Tips and tricks are usually what people ask of us and of their mentors and professors and analysts in general. Don't Be That Analyst and Words to the World are tips and tricks, because Don't Be That Analyst, like what Albert said, like, you know, this is something you shouldn't do when you're putting together a bulletin. And then the Words to the World, most of them are encouraging for the next generation, but really they're also giving tips and tricks for like success.
Yeah, so, the Words to the World are more serious. So we got a couple here that we particularly like. So here's the first one from Mike Winslow.
So I'm going to go with the one that I go with a lot of times now. I had a very close friend of mine that lost to cancer a few years back. And when he got diagnosed, it really changed his perspective on life. And he adopted the motto of be better today.
That's just great advice right there. And that's some of these here, as you mentioned, just the Words to the World is more serious. It's giving tips and tricks. It's giving guidance, and being better today is just great advice. It's a great motto for anyone, not just an analyst profession.
Definitely.
And then here's another one from Danielle Giroux.
My words to the world: be kind to one another, be considerate, and be respectful, and never, ever drink and drive.
I don't know why that last bit that she threw in there is so funny. I mean, those people that aren't in law enforcement, we'd be like, wait a minute, drinking and driving is not funny. It's not a joke, but you got to be with our warped sense of humor. Like, why? Just did not expect where she was going to say, and never, ever drink or drive. It makes me laugh. It is great advice, but it makes me laugh every time I hear it. And then we got Sean Fisher here.
Whatever you are not changing, you are choosing. That's something I live by. So if you don't like it, do something about it. Don't just keep complaining. Fix it.
Yeah, we all probably need to take that advice. You know, you're either part of the problem or part of the solution, or you're going to accept the results. And recently, another one that just came to mind too that I didn't grab a recording for was Dale Harris's quote. He said, "It is impossible to improve what you will not change." That's just great advice too. Things aren't going to get better unless you change something. What's that saying is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting different results. Mm-hmm. And finally, the last words to the world. This is very analyst specific. And this was Christopher Bruce. And you had mentioned his episode before, Mindy, just how poignant some of his topics and some of his opinions are about the profession. And I thought his words to the world here really encompass all the message that he was trying to deliver in his episode. But Christopher, what are your words to the world? So
I blew it because I offered them earlier. I had this whole thing that I'd written down, you know, that I wanted to say about the opportunity for everybody to be a pioneer. So I guess I'd just reiterate that because I didn't have a better idea. That this field is one that's constantly in flux, that's constantly growing. And every year there's new technologies, new techniques, new crimes, new challenges in policing. And of course, you know, we're crime analysts, we're part of a larger profession of policing and police science. And every year there are opportunities for everybody in this field to create something, create an idea, a model, a technique, a formula, a document, a file, to create something that other people will use, that will move other people forward, that might have your name attached to it in 20 years or so. You know, that we're going to use the elder technique in order to forecast crime in this series, that kind of thing. There's a ton of opportunity for that in this field. The best minds in crime analysis, the most advanced people, the people that you come to, the new analysts come to a conference and absolutely revere, still haven't thought of 90% of what needs to be thought of in this field. And so everybody's got an opportunity to contribute something. Find what really interests you, whether it's something substantive like a particular emerging crime. Heck, I don't think we have a good handle on cryptocurrency theft in the crime analysis field. So there's an opportunity right there. Somebody could be the expert on that for our association for some upcoming conference. We don't have enough models for predictive analysis. We're relying too much on simple models that were created for other purposes by academics who were trying to monetize them. We need to make our own models, and there are predictive methodologies that need to be developed. We need a return to community policing, obviously, in this country. We might call it something else, but we need to return to those basic principles. And there's a huge role for crime analysis to play. We need more effective ways of disseminating information to our audience. That old bulletin that we spend so much time creating that has that really careful layout, nobody wants to read that anymore. They want information given to them in order and in a platform that they can read on their hand. And we don't have, as far as I know, terribly good examples of the best products for this new era. So there's a ton of opportunity for every one of the 4,000 members of the IACA to contribute something innovative, something pioneering to this field. And I just want to encourage you to find what that is for you and pursue it.
I mean, that's just fantastic. Just as what I was saying before is every one of us as analysts have a story to tell in this profession. There's still plenty of opportunity to make a dent in this profession. There is so much opportunity to get a return on your investment, to study and learn and to know a particular part that will influence the profession.
Definitely. And I feel like I need to interject of like the old saying of like, don't judge a book by its cover, and also don't judge a podcast episode by its title, because Christopher Bruce's episode is called The Traditionalist, and I don't want it to be implied that he's like old school, stuck in his ways. And obviously, as you've heard, like, he is encouraging the future generation to keep progressing and not just stick to the old school way of things, but it's just more of like, you know, remember where you came from kind of thing. So just to interject in there for people who are just like, I don't want to listen to this person. He sounds like old school and he's not going to change. Like, no, his episode is very encouraging to the next generation, as you heard.
Yeah. And actually, another words to the world that's worth mentioning too was Noah Fritz's, where he quoted Herman Goldstein and the role of police. So that's definitely one that you can go back and listen to. And so all of those were great. Those are more serious ones. The words to the world are really good advice. And the ones that are lighter are the don't be that analyst and the public service announcements that we create. And so the public service announcement, that I'm not exactly sure what the story is behind that. I just wanted an opportunity to link the different guests together as we progress. And so when you hear someone's public service announcement, you realize that person, I can go listen to that if I miss that episode. And I always tell people with the public service announcements, they can be snarky. Think of Seinfeld. Did you ever notice that some craziness that goes on in our society, or a pet peeve that you have that you see that you said, you know, that's really kind of annoying. So the three public service announcements that I want to play, all make me laugh and I think are all poignant in terms of the spirit of the public service announcement. Again, not that they're not all good, but these were the ones that came to mind as I was thinking about this segment for this episode.
Hi, this is Carolyn Cassidy, and I'd like to give some information to you. We've all watched shows on TV where someone comes home and there's been a break-in. Their house is disrupted and possibly items have been stolen. Someone gets on the phone and calls 911. Help, please come. I've been robbed. Okay, let's clarify this. You have not been robbed. You have been burgled. A robbery is a person-to-person crime. A burglary is a property crime. If you are not home when someone comes in and takes something from you, you have been burgled. There has not been a robbery. Hashtag, you were burgled, not robbed.
And I actually like the hashtag. I mean, I know that's probably surprising for you, Mindy, that old man Elder likes the hashtag there at the end. You know, I was a grumpy guest on hashtags there for a long time. That's one of the progressive acts of my year this year, as I've become more open to the hashtag and its usefulness. But that particular one is great because I do like to get people's reaction when I use the word burgled.
I just say I got jacked. That's universal.
See, I don't think carjacking though when I hear that. I don't see that as either being robbed or burgled.
I just don't put myself in that situation where someone calls me out. I'll be like, nah, I just got jacked. You know what I mean, right?
Exactly. But burgled is, I don't know why that word's so funny. It's a little bit difficult to say and it's just not every day that you say it. So it is funny, but it's very true.
Yeah, kind of tickles the back of your throat when you say it, like burgle.
Exactly. And so, very good. Here's another one that I thought was very poignant.
Hi, this is Sally Trevor. Here to tell you that nobody needs to know what first car you have, or what's your pet's name, or what street you grew up on. We all see these on Facebook and we all want to answer them. But keep in mind that there are people who are reading them. And they're going to go on your bank account and they're going to say, oh, I forgot my password. Let me reset it. And the bank's going to ask, what's the first street you lived on? What is your cat's name? And what color car did you own? And the person reading it, they're going to look through your question and they're going to answer and they're going to get access to your bank account. We call that social engineering. So next time you see that survey, that questionnaire, don't.
I mean, that's just great. That's explaining a whole concept in our profession in about 1 minute. And it's just, you'd understand exactly what social engineering is after she's describing it. And it's something that you can share with, not only understand yourself, but share with everybody that you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just never got into that. Like, I never understand. Like, obviously we're friends on Facebook. You see my stuff. Like, I don't fill out where my hometown is. I don't fill out what my profession is. I lived in Colorado for almost 4 years. There are people who still think I'm in California. And it's like, because I don't post it on Facebook. I don't post my location. Yeah. I don't talk about it. So it's just funny how, you know, I see some of my friends do it. And it's just like, what color shirt are you wearing? Like, that's going to predict your future. Or like other crazy names. Like, what would be your stripper name? And I'm like, why are you filling these things out? Like, what kind of bread are you? Like, who?
understand these weird clickbait surveys or whatever they call it. It's so weird. And like she was saying, like, it's so easy to get those information from people, or, you know, like, what's your mother's maiden name? Like, again, like she was saying, like, who asked, like, why would that come up in conversation unless they're trying to fish for information from you? So
that's true. One of the main reasons I don't fill them out is because they're going to publish my results. And I was like, I just want to know what bred I am or what Avenger I am. I don't want you to post it. So all of those, it requires you, you have to post it after you're done. So I'm like, nope, don't want to do that, because I'm, believe it or not, a little shy.
I can see that, yeah.
All right. And so this last one, it cracks me up every time I play it, every time I hear it. But here is the last one for public service announcement.
Hi, this is Scott Eicher, and I am a retired FBI agent. And I just wanted to point out that FBI agents are people too.
I don't know why that gets me. That is just fantastic. Just the way he puts that is just like, you know, we're people too. And we all, as analysts, many of us, I should say, not all, many of us have taken shots at the FBI. So it's funny when talking to him about how people perceive the FBI. And when we were doing that, he didn't have one. And then we started talking a little bit and he said, well, you know, FBI agents are people too. And I said, oh, let's do that one. Let's do that, because that's fantastic. And so that's where that came from. He didn't have one, and we just did that on the fly a little bit. But it's short, it's sweet, and it makes me laugh every time that I hear it.
Yeah. And I feel like that goes with theme and motivation of our show too, because when we first started talking about, like, what is our mission, obviously sharing analyst stories, sharing the analyst perspective, but also I think we use the word humanizing because yeah. Analysts, you know, most people don't know what we do. It's just like, oh, it's a smart, geeky, nerdy, robotic, whatever person behind the computer doing statistics. So it's good reminder of, like, yeah, we're people too, you know, like when you're doing certain things, when you say certain thing, respond, like there's another person on the other side, like reading this and observing this. So be mindful.
Dale Harris, when he listened to his episode, he was very thankful for being on the show. And he said, now my family has a better idea of what I did in my career.
Because
of the episode. And that made me feel good. You know, that was something that I didn't necessarily think about when we do these episodes, but family, non-law enforcement folks do listen to these episodes and get a better perspective on what their family members do for a living or did for a living.
That is really sweet. And I was glad to be a part of that to help him out with that, because I don't know how to explain my career. I don't know how to translate it into Vietnamese. When my family, friends ask, like, what do you do? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I can say to the extent of, like, yeah, I work with law enforcement. I work for the government. I'm like CSI, but not CSI. I don't know idea how to explain it.
You can't say we're CSI, man. Yeah. You definitely can't say that.
Because they're like, are you like CSI? And I'm like, in the sense that I work for the police department, but I don't do anything that they do. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, I always say I work with data. When I was an analyst, I said, look, I work with police department data, or I work with databases. When I was an intelligence analyst, I was like, I find connections between people, places, and things.
Yeah.
And it's all really about data and searching it, massaging it, creating reports, creating outputs. And that's what I do.
I just say I do math. I'm like, at some point, I'm just like, I have no idea how to explain it. I used up all my vocabulary that I could explain it in simple terms. And I'm like, you know what? I just do math for the government. I do nerdy stuff. I don't know how to explain this. Can we talk about something else?
Yeah. All right. So those are the three public service announcements that were our favorite this year. And we wanted to create one of our own. So we're having the world premiere of Mindy and I's public service announcement. And this was something we recorded a while ago, and we weren't really sure where to put it. So we figured, hey, this is the year-end episode. It's the wrap-up episode. Let's do the world premiere now. Without further ado, here's Mindy and I's public service announcement. This is a reenactment of a married couple who are both law enforcement analysts and a fight that occurred one evening.
You didn't do the dishes?
Well, no, I was busy doing other chores. But my completed chores is up 5 in the last 7 days.
Yeah, but you're still down 13 over the last 28 days.
Well, I see your shopping purchases is up 20% this month.
My spending is still down year to date. In fact, my black shoe purchases are half of what they were this time last year.
Well, thank goodness last year wasn't a normal year.
Plus, I bought you new underwear, so your clothes purchases is up 40% this month compared to last month.
Well, wait, there were no clothes purchases the previous month, Miss Perfect. I didn't know you had the ability to divide by zero.
You should be happy. Your temperature-led policing program has worked great in this house. I have not touched your precious thermostat in the last 6 months.
Oh, so that is fantastic. Temperature-led policing is real. It affects millions of households. Fights over cost versus comfort. That is a true phenomenon. And I do like the divide by zero thing too. That is fantastic.
So people know, this is an accurate recreation of what goes on in the Elder house. I'm just kidding. his wife gave me a script to follow and everything. I was like, okay, yeah. This is the argument you guys had last week. Okay, I'll just read it line by line.
Yeah. So tell us what you think about our public service announcement. And if that rings true, any of those things ring true in your household, especially the temperature-led policing. Just a last segment, Mindy, just thought I'd do a quick preview for next year, 2021. Some of the themes we've joked about as we've dealt with this year is, I think for 2021, we will not have anybody from Colorado on the show.
Yeah. So people know I am from Colorado. Like, heavy on Colorado analysts was not purposeful. Like, it wasn't something like, no, we got to do everybody who's in Colorado because of me. It's just, Colorado just has great analysts. So, you know.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
I was like, well, I mean, if people want to call me out, people want to be like, well, no, Arizona has the best or Florida has the best. Like, we want the engagement, good and bad. Like, let's go.
That's true. But seriously, it was not intentional. Some of the things that just kind of spawned the way it went. ZMAP came up a bunch of times and the different guests that we thought of and then brought on board and were available to be on the show. It just turned out that we had so many folks from Colorado on the show this year. Next year, I hope to get more folks from the ILEA side, the intelligence analyst side, on the program. We're hoping to expand the podcast family next year and get some new, brand new podcasts affiliated with LEA Podcasts, part of the LEA Podcast family. We'll hopefully be getting back into going to conferences. And so I'm looking forward to taking the podcast on the road and talking with people and getting their reaction to the conferences and their perspective.
Definitely. And a reminder that our feedback survey is still live and will continue to be live. So if you have any suggestions, someone you want to recommend, topics you want to go over, we're all ears. We're open to it. You can find it on our website. At the very top, there's a get involved link, and in there is where our survey is.
You can always email us, leapodcasts@gmail.com. If you have a suggestion, like Mindy said, or maybe you want to be on the show, you can volunteer yourself to be on the show. We'd be happy to have you. If you want to just do maybe a public service announcement or a don't be that analyst or a favorite first job, we would take that as well, and we can set that up. But we would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being with us this year. Mindy, it just doesn't seem right. I think I got to say, we've given them just enough to talk bad about us later. But Mindy, I do appreciate you being on this adventure with me. Thank you so much. I am proud of what we were able to accomplish in 2020, and I look forward to working with you in 2021.
I'm excited.
Thank you for joining us today on Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. We hope you not only enjoyed the show, but also learned something new. For more information on our guests and information relating to today's topic, please visit our website at leapodcasts.com. Special thanks to The Rough and Tumble for our theme song. For more of their music, you can visit their website at theroughandtumble.com. Also, thanks to Kyle McMullen for our show logo. For more of his design, please visit his website at moderntype.com. The show is hosted, recorded, and edited by Jason Elder and written by me, Mindy. You can contact us both via the LEA podcast website. Please join us again next time as we interview another expert in this great field.